This is the EWN Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tara Darlington. This is Empowering Motherhood Radio, and I'm here to shine the light for your journey in motherhood. So an important question, of course, is education and schooling. And a question that I often ask people, and I find a lot of people haven't really thought about it, which is what qualities do we want our children to have? What skills do they need to develop, and what qualities do they need to develop to take out with them into the wide world after school? So today we have Norm Sivers, who is a Steiner teacher and the CEO of Laurean Nivala School in Glen Haven in Sydney, which is the school that most of my children go to. So welcome to the show, Norm, and just tell us a little bit about how you got into Steiner education. Were you brought up at a Steiner school?
No.
No.
I'll just go back a step and correct. I'm not a CEO. I'm sort of the principal and particularly to do with the teaching and learning, because the title of a CEO is more of a corporate business orientated title and really doesn't fit in a school environment. So as far as my background is concerned, my dad went to a Steiner school in Germany before the war, and his mother was sort of engaged in eurythmy, which is one of the arts that Steiner gave. And right back in Steiner's day. So I've been born into the Steiner way, I guess. However, I didn't go to a Steiner school myself because I grew up on a biodynamic farm down in the Bega Valley of New South Wales, and there were no Steiner schools around at the time, down in Bega anyway. And so I got involved with Laurean Nivala when I was about 18, through some friends of mine who actually started the school. So I was engaged with this school right from its initial beginning, and did my teacher training here. And 40 years later, I'm the principal of the school and still very heavily connected to it, all aspects of it, obviously. Even though I have spent time in the USA teaching in California, in Melbourne, principal down there, principal in Adelaide, done various things in between time, but now I'm back here at Laurean.
Yeah, that's right, and it's great to have you back. And what is, on a very basic level, it's always a hard question to answer. I know as a parent, people say, what's a Steiner school? And you're like, well, have you got 4 hours? the key elements, or a month, what are the key elements that you would say to someone who doesn't know anything about Steiner School that differentiates a Steiner education to other educational programs?
Yeah. Well, I guess most people think of education as something that you have to, it's stuff that you have to teach. In other words, you have to fill up this empty vessel. That a child is an empty vessel, and that education is all the stuff that you fill them up with. And I guess the Steiner School, in the basic philosophy of Steiner education, is a little different than that. That we don't see a child as an empty vessel. They're not a tabula rasa. They're not a blank slate. They have many things that they bring with them as individuals. And our job as teachers is to unlock those things, to open that individual up to who they really are as a person, and not fill them up with useless information and stuff that they may need in the future, which is what most education is based on. So it's really about looking at the individual. Who is this person? What are the traits and attributes and qualities and talents that this individual may have themselves as natural abilities and talents? And how can we as educators bring those talents out of that child so that that child can live totally happy with who they are as an individual?
Yeah, and there's a quote on the Steiner Australia website saying the soul needs nourishment as well as the body, which is a quote from Rudolf Steiner. And it's very much that as well. So you're not just nourishing the body and the mind. There's a lot more going on. And it's interesting when you look at his you know, bio, know, all the things that Rudolf Steiner did and how many, you know, pots he had his hand in, from philosophy to social reform to architecture, the list goes on, and education, of course. And, you know, that's one thing that, you know, bringing all of these things together, that they're not separate and the child's not separate from these things, but they're, you know, it's all crosses over, doesn't it? That's a big part of what I see in Steiner education. So talk to us a little bit about that, about, you know, not separate subjects being, you know, learn this, learn that, but bringing it all together in a different way.
Well, you know, knowledge is a really interesting quality, a really interesting thing to attain. And it's through this attainment of knowledge that we identify ourselves as who we are. So we study things and we're interested in things and we gain knowledge about things, and that helps to mould us as an individual. And it's interesting in the modern context where more and more young people today don't need to struggle for knowledge because they just Google everything. You know, the information is at their fingertips. And so we have a new relationship to the development of this individual self through the understanding of knowledge because of technology, because of the way that technology is blending the future. And so Steiner education all the way along has always been about this universality of everything. Like you said, Steiner was into agriculture, in biodynamic agriculture. He was into medicine, architecture, philosophy, economics, social renewal. Just about every aspect of life, Steiner had views on it or philosophies about it. And so education is the same. You've got to be able to do or bring to the children as many different, not necessarily many different views, but as many different experiences as possible so that they can bounce off those things themselves and therefore develop and strengthen themselves as an individual. It is really all about creating a situation where young people, young teenagers, when they leave school, that they can go out into the world confident with knowing who they are as an individual, as a person, rather than just hanging their strength or hanging their security on a few things that they know, that they've learnt, or a few things that they've passed the HSC with or passed their final exams with. Because that doesn't really give them a strength or a knowledge about who they are and what their place in the world is going to be. So it's not about what you learn, it's about how you learn it. It's not about what you think, it's about how you think, developing the capacity to think, so that you can help identify yourself as an individual in the world. I think that's really what, you know, one of the main themes of what we try and do in a Steiner school.
Yeah, that's right. And each Steiner school sort of has its own personality, doesn't it? Or the way in which
Absolutely.
They work with certain elements. And, I mean, part of that's just from their location geographically. You know, if you're, like, our school's in the bush, other schools are in the city. So tell us a little bit, as an example, of how, like, our location and our local community and geography, you know, how that affects the education that the children are getting at Lorien, just as an example of how each school is different.
Well, as Steiner said originally, that the curriculum should not be a set thing, that the curriculum should be developed, renewed all the time out of the children who you have in front of you. And obviously that's a great ask when we live in such a compliant sort of society, and we have the Board of Studies and different government bodies who are telling us what we should be teaching our children. However, like you said, each Steiner school out throughout the world, which there is now, you know, many hundreds, even thousands of them, they all are of their own nature, or they have their own qualities. And Lorien was always established in the 70s, and out of a rural environment. The Hills District of Sydney was a very rural environment at the time. The school site was originally an old orchard, and so there was always a very strong link to the natural world, and that's always been a very strong theme in Lorien, in connecting the children to the natural world, and that reflects in the curriculum through some of the lessons that are done, and also through the class trips and outings where the children are taken out into the world and experience the world in a real way. So, yeah, the different qualities of the schools, while some people might think, well, you know, that's sort of distracting or fracturing, in reality it is strengthening. It's like human beings, that we are all different, and it's that we have our strengths within our differences, not our weaknesses in our differences. And so the dynamic of Steiner schools is always really interesting, and you go to different schools and you see the different qualities, where they've come from, how they've evolved, and the teachers that they have within them. And they are all very unique, and yet they hold very common threads of developmental understanding of the children.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit more about that, about the development, especially in the early primary school years. A Steiner school, yep. A Steiner education takes quite a different path to a lot yep. of the mainstream schools. Mm-hmm. You know, so tell us a little bit about that pathway, you know, sort of from kindy, class 4, 5, mm-hmm. like that sort of path there, the learning to read, learning to write. Mm-hmm. You know, tell us a little bit about that, a bit of an overview of how that pathway is different to, you know, a mainstream school.
Well, I guess one of the big things that mainstream, particularly in Australia, is still pushing is that, you know, the earlier that the child learns to read and to write and learns numbers and so forth, that the better suited or better off they will be in the future. You know, you see kindergarten or preschool programs where children are already introduced to technology and laptops, and you know, they think it's wonderful if they can read by the time they're 3 or 4 years old. And there's no real evidence to show that that is of any value. In fact, there's more evidence to show that that is of no value. And you have leading countries in the world, leading educational countries in the world, which say that, like Norway and some Scandinavian countries, that will say that, you know, children shouldn't even go to school before they're 7 years old. And this is sort of more in line with what Steiner's view, is that the children learn an enormous amount in the early years, but they learn it through play, interaction with their environment, and, you know, other ways. So where the qualities of the imagination, which are natural children's qualities, can still be allowed to flourish and enhance. So what we see is that if a child has a rich, imaginative and creative life when they're young, that will transpose into capacities of thought and imagination later on in their life. So they can be really effective problem solvers in the future. And this has been proven many, many times over, obviously, as Steiner schools have been around for hundreds of years now, or 100 years plus. So in the early years of primary school, all the intellectual or academic work is brought to the children through imagination, where most of the sort of ordinary material like reading and the letters of the alphabet and spelling and mathematics and the mathematical principles, they're all brought to the children through stories and drawing and colourful means, which build a strong emotional connection to the intellectual material. So it's not just the intellect, but we're building this sort of underlying emotional connection. If a child loves the story, then that story sits deep within inside that child. And embedded into that story is the content of the lesson, of the academic work. So as they get older in class 4 and 5, those sorts of stories then start to come back up again as intellectual work. And it builds a really strong foundation in maths and reading. And what we find is that by the time the children are in class 5 and 6, that they really love to read, that they just can't get enough of literacy work and mathematics, You don't have kids saying, "Oh, I hate maths" and all that, because they have a whole different relationship to it. And then, of course, in the high school, where they really explore the intellect and they really explore the thought processes, then all of those underlying principles that they've had in primary school really come to the fore. And they have a whole different relationship then to the gaining of knowledge and being able to think and developing their thought capacity. So it's not to say that our children don't go to university because they have lots of, you know, imaginative stories or artistic work. They certainly do go to university. We have a 100% success rate of our students who want to go along the university pathway, that go to university and are successful at university. That again is all about the individual, about what their role in life is. So it is very different. The approach is very different than state school or conventional schooling, because again, we're not focused on teaching material or teaching stuff to children. We're more focused on unfolding the natural ability of those children to take up knowledge.
Yeah, and that comes into the will as well. I know with so I've had four come through up to class one, two more to go, and yeah. I know that as they come up to class one, you know, most of them are busting to read, aren't they? They're almost begging for it. So there's that creation of, you know, they've got so interested in the stories and in the storytelling. They're seeing writing around them. They want to go to that next level, and there's that real that will coming from within them that they want to learn to read rather than the other way around. So that's another thing I want to talk about is the whole, which I spoke to Robin Grill, who's a psychologist, recently. He's put out some really great programs for helping parents to help their children to do things from their own will, for, you know, cleaning their room, for example. We were talking about those sorts of things. Let's talk about, you know, about that creating the will in the child.
Mm-hmm. Well, Steiner speaks about that threefold human being is the thinking, the feeling, and the will of this threefold nature. And they're very difficult to separate, because obviously when you imagine you're sitting on the couch and you're bored, which children often say that they are, bored means that they just don't know what to do at that particular time. But when you see that how a child resolves that for themselves, they might sit there and say, "I'm bored," and then they think about something that evokes emotion within them, and then that emotion evokes their will. So they jump up and they race outside and they climb the tree or they play or they do whatever. So these three things work really strongly together. And the young children are all will beings. They are beings of will. They just want to do stuff. They want to get out and play in the sandpit, and they want to follow mum around, or if mum's doing the vacuuming, then they want to do the vacuum. They just imitate whatever's going on a will level. And so they're learning through that process of will. And that in young children, when the intellect comes in very early, when you start giving intellectual concepts and demanding or asking of young children to put their powers of intellect into play, the first thing we see is this sort of lack of will. The will dies away, and they just become head-orientated beings. While will activity children are, you know, very strong in that bottom area, and we find that as the children come up into high school, when they come into teenagehood, their will often comes into question. And not only in the will in active doing things like running around and playing sport and stuff, but when you think about will in thought, how do I lift my will into my thinking so that I am willing myself to learn something, to bring my will to a thought level, to will myself to engage in the material and learn the material or whatever I have to do. So the will is a fascinating thing. And as Sir Ken Robinson says, you know, we've taken dance out of the curriculum, or we've taken these activities of will out of the curriculum and put in place all intellectual things, when in reality we should, you know, there should be as much dance in the curriculum as there is maths, for example, so that the children have a balance of all of those aspects of emotional thinking and will activities all evenly throughout their curriculum. And I think that's really, really important in the future, that the will is one of the most important things that we educate, not the intellect. And if you've got a strong will, you will just about learn anything. And that's proven over and over again. But if a teenager is interested in something and they have the will to learn something, they will learn it very, very quickly. And if they don't have that will, if their will's not there and they don't want to do it, then you can try everything, every means possible, but you still won't teach it to them. They'll just reject it.
Yeah, that's right. And what's interesting there as well is the, you know, constant increase of anxiety in our society, in adults and
yep.
in teenagers, and actually in children, younger children as
children.
Well now. And yep. so, you know, you've got to wonder if there's a correlation between education moving more and more to being very in the head and very
yep.
intellectual and sitting still too much, that amount of anxiety that people have, which is really being worried about the future, being just all of your energy, you know, is in your mind and it's agitated. And I spoke to a primary school teacher recently, and she's been teaching for 10 years at a state school, and she's noticed over the last 10 years how much more paperwork
yeah.
they have to do and how much
Absolutely.
Less play that they've had in the class in the kindy years,
yeah.
You know, that sort of 6 or 7 year old over the last 10 years. And we really need to turn that around, don't we, for, you know, for
mm-hmm.
society
Absolutely.
In the future.
Yeah. Teachers, the compliance requirements from the government and the education department is just ridiculous, where teachers do have to spend hours, instead of in front of the children in classroom teaching them, they have to spend hours doing paperwork. And that is just such a deadening process. And, you know, we are, unfortunately, in this country anyway, we're still hindered by an outcomes-driven education system, you know, where everything is measured and tested and driven by outcomes. And those outcomes just don't meet the needs of the children anymore at all. We don't even know what the future is going to bring. We can't predict what the future is. And we still have a system which comes out of the industrial age, which is all outcomes-driven. And yet we're giving our children skill sets and teaching them stuff at the moment which they won't need in the future. So it's a very different revolution that we're facing. You know, Kevin Rudd gave some very good indications about the education revolution of the future, but his centre was around technology, and I think education revolution is going to be way beyond technology in the future.
Yeah, well, technology is going to be a tool, isn't it, rather than, you know, the outcomes that we're looking for our children of problem solving and collaboration and empathy,
mm.
which are the things I was talking with Brett Rolfe about. So what are the
mm.
other sort of qualities that you really nurture differently in a Steiner education, such as collaboration and empathy? I know with the school trips, you know, they go
yep.
on a hard hike. You know, the kid
yep.
they don't normally like becomes the kid who,
yep.
you know, helps keep them going. And then there's a new bond, you know, forms after that.
Yep.
So I'd like to talk a little bit about, I guess, well, let's talk about the school trips that Lorien does, which is quite unique
mm-hmm.
From a lot of schools.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other schools do a little bit of it, but Lorien does a lot of it in a big way.
Yeah.
And those
yeah.
qualities, those life skills that we're actually, I mean, I know with my children, they get off the bus from a trip and there's
yeah.
a new child standing in front of me,
yeah,
even
right.
at 7
Absolutely.
Years old, you know.
Yeah.
And that comes into the rites of passage stuff as well. But, you know, what qualities are things like school trips nurturing in the children?
Well, you know, there are a couple of key words, I suppose, which are, you know, trendy or very often used out there at the moment in all education, and that is resilience is one of them, you know, self-reliance, all of these things Lorien has been doing these programs for nearly 40 years now. And while a lot of other schools take up outdoor ed programs, you know, which are really great programs, and they do a lot of fantastic stuff out there, and taking children anywhere out into the bush or into nature and all of those things is just brilliant. But one of the key elements of Lorien that we've always done is we don't just take them out in the bush to teach them skills about camping or, you know, lighting fires and looking after yourself or putting up with the cold weather and all of that. But it's about getting along with each other as well. There are very important social attributes that the children learn. Tolerance, which is a really important one in this modern society, which seems to be so intolerant of difference, and bullying and all of those other things that come out of that, which out of that intolerance, prejudice and all of those discriminatory behaviours that come out of intolerance. And when we go away on a class trip, for example, I'm about to go away with year nine this year in a few weeks' time, and we'll be going for 3 weeks travelling through Central Australia. Now, you're living together as a class, as a group, for 3 weeks, camping each different night in a different place, sleeping in your swag out under the stars, visiting different places, going for hikes, all of that stuff which builds rites of passage and builds all that within the individual, but it also builds incredible links between individuals. And really, a big part of education has to be based on relationship, about your relationship as a student to the teacher, your relationship to the other students in the class, and your acceptance of them. You know, you have children who are good learners or fast learners or academic learners, others who are artistic learners, others who are social learners, others who are practical learners. And we all different. And so that's, you know, the whole premise of just ordinary standardized testing doesn't make sense when you really appreciate the different qualities that each individual child has. So when you're out in the bush and you're camping or you're on one of these class trips, a child who struggles in the class and may be seen by his classmates in the class as a bit of a slow person or a bit of a, you know, not a high achiever, when they're out in the desert or out camping, they may be absolutely fantastic. They may be able to cut wood with an axe. They may be able to put up a tent within 5 minutes. They may be able to cook out. So whatever they can do, they shine out there in the natural world. And therefore, their classmates look at them completely differently and they develop a whole different perspective. So you're right, they do come back from these trips different people because they've found something else about themselves while they're out of their normal comfort zone. And when they're out in the bush or when they're camping or whether they're travelling, it doesn't matter, they find themselves. And that's really what the essence of the trips are about, is about really coming to terms with who you are as a person, yourself.
Yeah, and it's an amazing process they go through. I mean, not all schools have the facilities or the capacity or even the finances to go on such trips. What other ways can you bring that into education?
Oh, that's a really difficult question to, you know, how you do that in a standard school or I really feel out there in the wider community, there are fantastic teachers in state schools and in regular schools out there in the world. They really struggle to help their children as much as they possibly can within the confines of their system. I really feel for them. I think we are really fortunate in our school that we have set our school up in a way that can meet the needs of the children in as many ways as we would like, and we have the capacity to do it. So I think we're really, really fortunate and really lucky, and that our kids are lucky in what they get. But I don't know whether there's any set answers for what other schools can do. I wouldn't like to tread on that, tread into that water too much.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a matter of, thinking about creating situations that, where they can get these experiences and maybe, reassessing the importance of it and where the resources go for some schools. They are qualities that the children really do need to develop and experiences that, are so beneficial. And like you said, we are extremely lucky to have the capacity to be able to do it at our school.
I guess one thing John Taylor Gatto, he said that, in American schooling system was aimed or centered around conformity. And when you're teaching thousands of children, and particularly here in Australia where they're given school uniforms and they have to, fit into a certain system, it's about that sort of conformity. And in that conformity, there's not much room for allowing freedom of individual expression or the unfoldment of the individual. So I guess the only way you can really address that is by having that shift in your consciousness about what is the education system really about? Are we really educating children to become free individuals in their own thinking, or are we just putting them through a system so that they fit into another system at the end of it? Are we just forcing them through a sort of educational sausage machine so that they all fall down into the industrial world and fit, a spare part in that sort of industrial economic machine? I think that's really where the revolution has to happen, is that we have to change our whole thinking about what is education, about what we are actually doing in education and why we're doing it. And I think that's happening.
Yeah.
A lot of people are, I think there's a lot of great stuff happening and people are trying all sorts of new things and keeping children at home and not sending them at school at all and all sorts of stuff is happening, and that's great. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's right. And even when you touched on, the individualism and the uniform and I guess even just that element of allowing the child to stay connected with who they are and create their own style and, as a person as well as what they wear.
Mm.
But,
absolutely.
At Lorien, they don't wear uniforms. And a lot of people say to me, oh, God, that must be terrible. That must be so competitive. But it's not at all because they don't know anything else. No. Tell us a little bit more about the no uniform thing. It's a common question.
Yeah, it's interesting that, we're probably, in some countries of the world, children don't wear uniforms. They don't have uniforms. And uniform is one of these old British things that comes to Australia via the British education system, I guess. But in most schools in America, they don't wear uniforms except really highly sort of traditional sort of schools. So it's a traditional sort of thing that you identify through your uniform who you go to or where you go to school. And so that is aligning yourself with a particular institution or a particular place. And we just look at it a little bit differently. But if a child wants to be completely comfortable with who they are, then, that they don't be forced into one of these uniforms. When I drive to school sometimes and I see little children, 6 and 7 years old, in these business suits with ties, and it's like an out of prison that we're making that child conform to a mindset of society that we think that they should fit into, rather than allowing that child to be free as an individual. It is a constant question, and while we as a school, I guess in some ways are judged by the community. Our children don't wear uniform. We've had a lot of interaction with bus drivers and people who say to our children, "You're not going to school because you haven't got a uniform on." So the kids get into trouble for trying to get on the bus because they haven't got their uniform on. All of this sort of, so our society is so already tuned to this judgmentalism of what a school child should look like or how they should be, that it is already putting that constraint on the child and putting that child under that sort of pressure. So our uniform, you know, what the children wear to school has to be practical, has to be easy to allow the child to be free, be able to play soccer or play on the play equipment without having to worry about what they're wearing. Sometimes they might get a bit dirty, you know, and so what? You know,
a that's bit what dirty, being a child Norm, is. Come on. A bit
well,
dirty.
Sometimes they get a bit, yeah, sometimes they get covered
they
in mud.
They get very muddy sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. So,
that's when you know they've had a good
is.
Day at school.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily always like to see them going home covered in mud because, you know, but it means that they're passionate about what they're doing. And to be able to develop their passion, if that's, you know, running around in the bush or playing in the mud sometimes, that to me is a very important thing because we live more and more in a society which lacks passion, and we need to develop passion in our children so that they are capable and willing to change the world in the future.
Yeah, that's right. And you've never seen as much passion and as much will as a 3 to 6 year old heading for a puddle with or without gumboots, have you?
Exactly.
They always go straight for it.
Yeah.
They love it. So what my next question is going to be about, you know, the future of Steiner education. So you've created the Novalis College. And I just want to talk a little, I mean, we've touched on that quite a bit anyway, you know, that there is a bit of a underlying revolution wanting or even beginning.
Mm-hmm.
People are wanting change in education. They're talking about it. They're thinking about it. And a lot of the qualities that people are saying or that we know we need, you know, that are highly prized when you go for a job interview of being creative,
yep.
being innovative, yep. being able to collaborate, problem mm-hmm. solve. And yet it seems like we need to bring these more consciously into our education system. So tell us about the Novalis College and sort of the future of Steiner education.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that all of those qualities that you just said about, you know, imagination and problem solving and collaboration and all those things, they're all qualities which young children naturally have. And it seems, as Ken Robinson said as well, it seems that the education system takes away these qualities, and yet these are the qualities we want our young people to have when they leave school. We want them to be creative and imaginative, to be able to solve problems, to be able to be collaborative and work together well, and yet this is not what we're seeing. So in the Novalis College, we want to continue that education not only is a part of children's lives, but it's like Einstein said, if you're not learning, then you're not living. You know, learning is a lifelong process. It should never stop. And we go through the schooling system, and it used to be quite commonly understood and even spoken of as that you really learn everything once you leave school. You know, what you need to learn in the world, you learn once you leave school. And it seems like a school like Lorien, which we provide such a rich education for children, that we also need to provide a rich education for the community, for our parents and for the wider community as a whole. And so at the beginning of this year, we sort of started up the Novalis College as a venue for adults learning to continue this process so that children can go through the school and then because we have a lot of parents who are ex-students of the school and come back to the school who are interested in Steiner philosophy and the education and biodynamic agriculture and all other forms and particularly the arts of painting and drawing and music and eurythmy and speech. All of these things are vital in adult learning, as because we as individuals never stop unfolding. So even as older people, we get older and older, but we're still unfolding. We're still discovering new things about ourselves. We're still learning new material. We're still excited about things. We should have these passions that we have when we're young still in going on forever and ever. So Novalis College is a real added part of the school to try and address and connect the school even more to the community, to build the community of learning, adult learning and ongoing learning within its broader community, not only of parents, but also other people in the outside world who they may not have children or they may be just interested in Steiner philosophy or Steiner education. And so they can come to the Novalis College and learn more about it. Eventually, obviously, we want the college to be set up in a way that it can formalise some of the courses, and that there may be a four-year sort of diploma course in the arts where a person can do more specific training. But all that will come as the college grows. We're only just getting it off the ground now, and it's mainly centred around the ongoing teachers of our ongoing training of our own teachers, and also to help with education for our parent body.
Yeah, which is so important. As you said, we're always unfolding, and I mean, I've been at the school for 12 years, and you know, there's always something new to learn about. Each child that I bring through the school is different, and so you know, we have a completely different experience.
Absolutely.
With each child, and constantly learning. You know, they're just a mirror, aren't they? Complete mirror of yourself. So. You know, so as you're learning to work with each child, and you're constantly learning more and more about yourself and, you know, about the Steiner education. So one of the other defining factors of Steiner education is the main lessons and the way the day is structured. Because I personally feel like I notice at a lot of schools the kids are so rushed all day, moving from class to class to class to class, and you know, they might have 9 classes in a day. And, you know, the Steiner system is set up a little bit differently to that. So give us a bit of an outline of the day for a Steiner kid.
Well, I sort of like to have the metaphor of education like food. Like you know, modern education is like fast food. Like McDonald's food, it's fast, it's quick, it's tasty, it's exciting, all of those things, but it's not very nourishing. And Steiner education is like slow food. Everything is done deep for the deepening of learning, not for the quantity of it, but for the quality of it. And so the main lesson, the whole day, in fact. I was just interviewing a girl yesterday from another big private school, and she wants to come here. And I said, we only do 3 lessons a day. You know, there's generally only 3, maybe 4 lessons a day. And she was just absolutely blown away. She couldn't understand how you could only have 3, and she has to do like 8 or 9 lessons a day. And the problem that she was having was that she was being completely overwhelmed by the amount of material and amount of stuff that she was supposed to be learning. And she was, you know, like you said before, the stress, the anxiety, all of those things were coming to the head and therefore inhibiting her ability to learn anything. And so she was falling further and further behind. And so when I said we only have 3 lessons a day, and that's, you know, those lessons may go for 2 hours, a main lesson could run for 2 hours every day of the week, for 3 weeks, the same subject. You know, that's you start to really think about slow food, about the deep nourishment then that the content of that lesson material is doing for the individual. So we look at a day that is broken up, like I said before, like the indications that Steiner have given about the thinking, feeling and willing, this cycle of threefoldness. It's also given that way in the day itself, where in the morning where we're most capable of using our intellect, where our mind is alive and fresh, then the main lessons take care of those more intellectual subjects. While in the middle part of the day, when our emotional life or our feeling life is more at play, we will be more centered around those sorts of lessons like languages and geography, social science, art, music, all of those things that relate to our cultural being. And then in the afternoon, when we're pretty tired, our head's been worked, our emotional life has been worked, we may just focus on the will activity and we do woodwork and carving and sculpture and all of those things where our hands can come alive. So the whole day is broken up into those threefold nature. But also, like I said, the main lesson will run for 3-week period where the same subject will be taught for 3 weeks for 2 hours every morning. And that really allows a deep penetration of the material. And not only that, but it bridges from one day to the next so that the child, particularly in high school, the students can take that material home into their sleep, into their nightlife, and they come back with a different view of it the next day. The old adage, if you've got a problem or you've got something, you go off and sleep on it. And that process of sleeping on it is a real digestive process, and that works wonders in understanding different perspectives. So, for example, you know, a student doing a science main lesson, they may have set up some experiment. The teacher may ask them to, set up the experiment and not necessarily make too many conclusions about it yet, but think about their experiment, and then tomorrow when they come back the next day, then they might write up a report about that experiment. And so it gives it time overnight to digest within them and a deeper penetration of understanding. And when they come back the next day to write up their report, it is a different perspective. And so they've gained another perspective on it. And that's really about building that depth, that slow depth of education, rather than just skipping across more and more textbook type material, which is just a very superficial way of learning, only to meet the requirements of an exam at the end of it. It's not about deep human learning.
Yeah, they really do. I've still got all their books. You look through their main lesson books and, you know, they really do come to, you know, get deep into the subject and then come back out to look, you know, have a really broad perspective and understanding of it, which also allows them to look at it from different perspectives and different angles. And you might get to look at science, you know, through a bit of geography or something. So you're not just isolating that subject in that way by having the 3-week. Yeah, tell us a little bit more about that, because that's something that I'm really, I think, you know, when you're in mainstream education, you can't even imagine it, you know.
Yeah.
Bringing it together and looking at it through the different. Yep.
Yeah, it's a trend in the modern education world. I know in Norway they're looking at eliminating subjects, where they don't teach subjects, and I think that's fantastic because, you know, in a main lesson, you might do a history main lesson, but in that history main lesson, there's geography comes into that, there's English, there's literature, literacy comes into it, your reading material, your writing text. You're giving accounts of historical events. There's maths that come into that because you're dealing with timelines. So in a main lesson, you're teaching a whole range of subject material in that one main lesson. So it gives a whole broader context. It's not just a single-minded context that you're working on. And I think in what is happening in the greater context of education in the world today, with this opening up and looking at how to teach a whole range of subjects in one lesson, that is really the best way to go, with project orientated. You think of children doing a cooking lesson, those children might not be really good at maths, or they might not be really good at being able to solve problems, And so you do a cooking lesson, which they love to do because they love food. They're into the, you know, it's an activity that they love to get involved in. And yet they're putting in practice all of those essence of maths and weighing and measuring and problem solving. And they're seeing a tangible result by the time they've finished the cooking or their cake or their bread or whatever they have pulled out of the oven. There's a tangible result. So it's bringing it into a really current or really vibrant sort of current context, which is so important in today's fragmented and scattered sort of society. So I think it's great. I think teaching the main lesson that Steiner has given 100 years ago, and we've been teaching main lessons for many, many years, children gain a whole range of subjects out of each one of them, and they do link across as well. They might be doing a biology lesson on different plants, and they may be expressing those qualities of those plants through a poetry or through writing their own account of those things. So literacy is a big part of that natural science lesson. So it's not about just learning about facts and learning the trivial, superficial facts, but delving deeper and deeper into each aspect of the lesson content.
Yeah, and that comes back to the will as well. So with that sort of project learning or that more, you know, bigger, broader perspective with something like that, say with the cooking thing, you know, all they want to do is eat the cake. So there's, that whole will there to, you know, they want to get it done. They want to get it in the oven and they want it to be good. Yeah, the motivation there. So, you know, that gives them a whole different, like you said, rather than just learning something by heart and sitting a test for it, you know, there's a whole different way that the child's then working within themselves.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it is so difficult in this, like I said before, in this outcomes-based, you know, where we have to meet certain outcomes. And these outcomes of our education are set by governments, not by educators, but by governments. Mm. And you know, they're so arbitrary. Some of them are so trivial and so arbitrary. And the children have to go through these processes to meet these outcomes. And they're so trivial and so arbitrary, no wonder children become disconnected or you know, not engaged with what they're learning or with their education. And that's the biggest problem we have today is this disengagement that students are having from their learning because they're meeting outcomes which are completely arbitrary and don't meet their needs as individuals. And obviously, I'm glad to see that children are becoming disengaged with that learning material because that's what will drive the change. That's what will make the change. That will drive it. The more children that become truants and don't want to go to school anymore and, you know, muck up in their classrooms, that will drive change and force people to look at what they're teaching and why they're teaching it.
Yeah, and just to actually reassess what those learning outcomes are that we, you know, need to be working towards, and it brings us back to those, you know, that those personal qualities to develop, not just the knowledge, which is right where we started.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's all about being human. You know, we are human beings, but are we being human? And are we educating or putting children in an environment, an educational and learning environment, where they can be humans, where they can really practice the art of being human. And that's what we need. We need to solve the problems of the world, the pollution, the degradation of the environment, all of the problems that we have in the world. We can only solve those problems by understanding them and addressing them from a human level, from the human being. And, you know, the production of food, the industrialization of agriculture, the chemical farming, all of those things are anti-human. They're not in the best interest of the human being. And so we have to be able to educate our children to be human and not just to meet arbitrary outcomes to pass an HSC to to get a UII, to go to uni, to get a degree, which is not going to, you know, satisfy you as a human being at all.
Yeah, not without those other qualities being developed. Or not, then you spend,
absolutely,
you know, your mid-20s looking for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Go and sit on Ed's rock, or go to India or something.
Well, I guess yourself. That's one reason why, you know, a lot of people go backpacking for a year after they finish school or after they finish uni, because they've then got to go and do that work for yourself.
Yep.
And we could bring quite a few more of those things into everyday education just by, I guess, adding some of these qualities as part of the outcomes. You know, and you know, reframing the way, you know, the definition, our definition of education in today's time.
If we could get the Board of Studies to put into the outcomes that we develop in children the love of learning, you know, the seat of learning. If we could get that as a key outcome, and that they didn't have to pass all these arbitrary intellectual sort of measuring sticks and bars and random tests that they have to do, then we would be, you know, then we'd be getting somewhere. That would be fantastic to see. But
and that's not... go.
Yeah, it's not going to happen in the short term, I don't think.
but at least we can talk about it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's, the more conversation we have about it, the more we can talk about it, the more that we can get it out there in the world. And we see that the world is in a situation where they're really open to conversation. We aren't fighting anymore for our belief so much. We've gone into a world where we're interested in what other people do. You know, 10, 15 years ago, we weren't interested in what other people would do. We were fighting for what we believed in. And we've transcended that. We've moved on in the world this globalization has been a process of our consciousness where we love what other people do. We open our hearts to what other people do, and we're interested in what other people do. And that's what, coming back to that tolerance quality, a leading educationalist that I was reading about recently said that this is the new tolerance. That the old tolerance used to be that we tolerated what other people did. We didn't do anything about it, we just tolerated it. In other words, we just left them to do what they did and tolerated it. So we distanced ourselves from them in that tolerance. But the new tolerance is that we show an interest in them. And if we want to tolerate the differences that we have within us, within our religious backgrounds or cultural differences and all of those things, then we need to show an interest. And I think that's what the world is doing. We are being forced in many cases to become more interested in what other people are doing. And I think this is a really good thing. So for education as well, that's a great process.
Yeah, that's right, because there's many people around the world, around Australia, around Sydney doing amazing things. And the
Absolutely.
More we learn from each other and have the conversation, then we can really start finding, you know, new ways, or, you know, picking up the things that are really going to take us where we want them to take us, or our children and our society.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for your time. That was awesome conversation. And I'm going to finish off there, and I will put a link through to the Lorien website, which is lorien.nsw.edu.au. And the other interesting, there's a lot. If people search Steiner Education, they'll on Google, they'll find a lot of knowledge and information there. But the Australian one is steinereducation.edu.au to look up more information about that. So thanks again for your time, and see you at school next week after I've recovered from the school holidays.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Norm.
Bye.
This is the EWN Radio Network.